Good evening, and welcome to tonight's live telephone town hall with Congressman Sam Farr. This technology allows Congressman Farr to chat with hundreds of his Central Coast neighbors while sitting in his office here in Washington. In a few moments, we'll be joined by the Congressman, but first, I'd like to explain what will happen during our hour together. At any time during the call, if you would like to ask Congressman Farr a question, please press star 3 on your telephone. You will continue to hear the conference call until one of our town hall assistants can join you and take your question. Please be ready to give them your name, your city, and your question. This will allow us to keep the discussion flowing and reduce repeat topics. If we can't get to your question during the call, you will also have the chance to leave a voice message for the Congressman at the end of the call. It's a little extra incentive to join us for the whole hour. And finally, a recording of this teleconference will be available on our website tomorrow, so please feel free to visit www.far.house.gov and listen. Now, I would like to introduce Congressman Sam Farr. He has served the Central Coast for more than 30 years as a county supervisor, state representative, and now congressman. And again, if you would like to ask the congressman a question at any time, please press star 3 and someone will be with you shortly. And now, joining us is Congressman Farr. Congressman?
Hi, this is Sam Farr, and I want to thank you all for joining in on this call. I'm very excited to be able to use this technology to speak to you from my Washington office. I'm looking out the window here. It's late at night, and full moon is rising. It's a beautiful night, although it's awfully hot, and I miss the coastal weather that we have out there. I'm excited that I'll be back in California in a few weeks for our August recess session. I have a full schedule of events planned, and also I'm hosting town hall meetings. I'll be there in person in those meetings throughout the region. But before Congress does head home, we have a lot of unfinished business to tend to. And while we have a few people waiting to join us, I'd like to talk about a few things that Congress has accomplished this year. But mostly it's a disappointment because the House has passed a record number of substantive bills, but they seem to get stuck in the Senate where they're deadlocked on a partisan debate, which can always be held up by a filibuster. So the bills that finally get through that have made some progressive changes, the president has vetoed, including the bill that would not penalize doctors in Medicare. Fortunately, with that, president's veto was overridden yesterday by both houses overwhelmingly. And I think it shows to Washington that the White House at this point is kind of a lame duck and maybe a dead duck in being able to influence Congress right now. We're waiting for the next administration, and of course, everybody in Congress is up for re-election this November. But while we're in this re-election mode, there's also a problem with the economy in this country, with the war in Iraq, certainly gas prices, and everybody has a solution to the gas prices. It's probably the top concern across the nation. It affects everything because everything is transferred at one time or another in a truck or car. And yesterday, the president lifted the moratorium that President Clinton had signed. In fact, he signed it in Monterey at our historic Oceans Conference, in putting the outer continental shelf oils off the California coastline, Washington, and Oregon, if there are any there, into a moratorium, which President Bush lifted. It would also affect other outer continental shelf leases in other states. It doesn't mean anything because Congress has to take further action to get those lease sales sold and authorized for sale, and we're working on different varieties of that. As you know, I think that it's the worst thing we could do to get our addiction, to get our way from our addiction to oil. If we just reduce the amount of mileage that are consumed by gasoline, we wouldn't need to import any foreign oil. And California has proved that we can do that. So there are a lot of tools in the toolbox that we'll be working on, and I'll be talking about those a little bit later in the program. If you've just joined this call, please press star 3 and ask a question, and our town hall assistant will be with you. Finally, I'd like to mention the fires that we've just hopefully been able to contain. It's a tremendous amount of burn that has gone on, particularly in Monterey County, where the two fires burned a record number of acres, probably exceeding 180,000 acres, making it one of the largest wildland fires in California history. And that fire and the Castle Rock fire and others have burned a lot of homes. So we are trying to make sure that we can help people who are in distress with the aid that's available, and I'll be talking more about that in the communities when I get home. So I appreciate you coming into this town hall meeting. This is a interesting technology to be able to speak live to you from across the nation and yet feel like we're having one-on-one. So I appreciate it, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Congressman. While our town hall assistants are getting callers ready, I would like to ask about a topic that is on a lot of minds at the moment. The Central Coast already faces sky-high housing costs, and growing foreclosures only make the problem worse. What's being done to fix this?
Well, certainly not enough. Congress is now faced with this helping Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which are government-sponsored enterprises that we have helped them out in the past by creating the legislation that makes them exist. It's essentially those two organizations hold about half of all the mortgages or guarantees for mortgages, and Congress is dealing with how to make sure that they don't fail, which we will do. It's just how do we best do that? I've actually got some ideas in that area that this is public money that we're going to help Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac with, and maybe we ought to turn that money into helping our county housing authorities acquire these houses in foreclosure, work out with the people that are in it a renting kind of policy so that they can stay in the home, and those homes that have people have left, maybe make them available to people of low and moderate income would like to get into a home through our Section 8 vouchers and things like that. I think that it's kind of a community reinvestment act that would, I think, benefit the local lenders, the financial communities, local communities, and certainly people in need of housing. And most of all, try to make sure that people who've gotten into these homes can stay in them. So these kinds of issues will be brought up in the next few weeks as we discuss exactly what we're going to do to help the further help the mortgage crisis.
Thank you, Congressman. Now we're going to go live and take some questions from our callers. For those of you just joining us, to ask the Congressman a question, please press star 3, and you will soon be joined by one of our town hall assistants. Our first question comes from William Force from Santa Cruz. He has a question about the VA. William, are you there?
Yes, I am. Yes, I appreciate the opportunity to make this call and contact. You referred me to Veteran Services before, and there was one fellow, Al Molson, who helped me, and he transferred to San Mateo. And Ken Burke is now in charge for Veteran Services, and it seems like he swamped. And the assistant said that he might be transferring also, but I just qualified recently for PTSD service connection through my counselor at VA, and he sent the paperwork like 2 months ago. So, and
what's the question?
The question is, yeah, there's a backlog. I haven't heard for any information from him whether there's help available coming down for, because he's handling many servicemen's claims and stuff. So I was wondering if there was help on the way.
Well, William, thank you for the question. I'm very proud of the fact that we have 36,000 veterans in our Central Coast region, and I've been very aggressive at being able to set up these veterans clinics both in Capitola and at the former Fort Ord, and working very hard along with John Laird and others to get a veteran cemetery at Fort Ord. And I'm sitting on the committee that appropriates money for the Veterans Department and really involved with trying to do a lot of innovative things to help our veterans. Actually, I'm very interested in your question about backlogs, because we have appropriated a record amount of money to hire thousands of new staff for the Veterans Department to just deal with those backlogs. And I'll check into that backlog as it exists in the Capitola Clinic. And if you need any further assistance, the first person in my office who handles all my veterans affairs in Santa Cruz is Julian. Julian Chacon, and he's really good at this and good at following through, and we will assist you in any way we can.
Thank you for that question. Again, callers, if you have a question for the congressman, please press *3 anytime during the call, and someone will be with you shortly. Our next question comes from Neil Sawney from Santa Cruz. He has a question about Medicare reform. Neil, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, Neil Samphar. How are you?
Yeah, hi, Congressman Farr. This is Dr. Neil Sawney. I'm a cardiologist here in Santa Cruz. And I'd like to start off by thanking you for your efforts in Medicare reform. I know you've been very active helping both reverse the cuts and also working with Title 99. As you know, we have a huge problem with Medicare and availability of physicians to see patients in the South County. And I was wondering where the status of the Title 99 issue is.
Well, the Title 99 counties are many in California. We have a tiered system where we have, as you know, but others listening may not know, that there's a tiered system in California where some of the counties have a cost index that allows them to have a higher reimbursement rate, and they're in these different categories. And Santa Cruz, along with the majority of counties in California, and certainly the rural ones, are in this Title 99, and they receive the lowest reimbursement rate in the country. So you have Santa Clara, for example, receiving the highest, and Santa Cruz receiving the lowest, and you can imagine what that does to doctors who are practicing in that region. They'd be much better off just moving their practice over the hill if they're seeing Medicare patients. We've been trying to not only have save the Medicare program, which this administration has been very critical of, and as you heard earlier, the president vetoed the bill, which would have prohibited the cuts, a 10% reduction on top of what you're receiving right now, and as luckily the Congress overrode that veto yesterday. But we still haven't solved the Santa Cruz problem, which is called the sustained growth rate problem, and the geographic practice cost index, which is what the Title 99 refers to, and this unfortunately was not included in the Medicare legislation. I've been working on it for years, and I'm going to try to still get it solved. It's about a $75 million cost for the next 18 months to handle all the counties in California, I think six or seven of them now, that warrant and have the economic data show that they should get a higher reimbursement rate. So we're not giving up on you, and I just thank you for seeing Medicare patients. I know fewer and fewer doctors are, and certainly those that are seeing them are limiting any add-ons, and that means that if they either have to go out of county to get assistance or end up in the emergency room, and that's the worst way for elderly people to get access to medicine. So I hope we can get this solved.
Thank you for that question. Remember, if you have a question for the Congressman Farr, please press *3 on your phone at any point during the call. Our next question comes from Faye Levinson from Aptos. She has a question about offshore oil drilling. Faye, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Good evening, Congressman. Thank you for your technology call.
Hi, Faye. Thank you.
Hi. I'm very concerned about President Bush's lifting of the ban of oil drilling, and I'm glad to hear you support continuing the ban. And I'm wondering how you feel that Congress is going to act on this issue. I volunteer at state parks here in California, and we're on the coast, as you know, and we're trying to protect it. And I'd like to know what you think Congress is going to do regarding his lifting of the ban.
Well, this has become quite a political issue with a campaign right around the corner, the election around the corner. The Republicans, with the president leading them, essentially are calling for drill, 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 almost anywhere it's possible. The irony of it is that of all the oil-producing lands in the United States, only 26% of them are on federal property. So with about 26% of those lands, and much of it already being leased, 82 million acres of being leased to oil companies that are sitting on those leases. Our response is use it, use the leases that you've bought, certainly at very low prices at the time when oil was not as selling for what it is now, or lose those leases. The White House, you know, it's the tragedy of this is that it's a White House that was raised on oil. Everybody working in the administration there have been former oil folks, including the president. And they see the problem in answering the oil shortage. It's not really a shortage. It's a demand problem. The United States is a big producer of oil. We're the third largest producer in the world. And yet we're the number one consumer, and we're not the most populous country. So if you look down the road, you can see that there's no simple short solution. If the president wanted to bring down the prices immediately, which certainly would help the economy of this country, you could release oil from the Strategic Oil Reserve, which is the largest amount of oil is in that strategic, a billion barrels of oil. And we could be releasing that to the market right now. And I think it would show the oil cartel that we can play this game too. And if they're going to keep speculating on the price of oil, we can flood the market and bring down the prices. And that would be the only thing that could immediately affect oil prices, and the president is unwilling to do that, even though he's been urged by both parties in both houses to release some of that oil. The Central Coast, fortunately with our National Marine Sanctuary, was statutorily put in there that we could not drill for oil in it. So unless Congress was specifically amending the Marine Sanctuary Act, which I don't think they would do, we're protected. But that doesn't mean that Santa Barbara or other areas are. I think California, again, the governor of California isn't supporting offshore oil drilling. We kind of are on the right mend in the state. We are now the lowest per capita user of energy in the United States. The Monterey Bay area has been one of the lowest users of water in the United States, particularly in the Monterey Peninsula, where there's been almost a moratorium on water meters. And we are in recycling water and recycling and going to organic, unless, you know, all of the green technologies. We're the best in the whole state, and California is way ahead of the rest of the nation. So I'm very proud of my district that we've been able to look at the future and come up with practical solutions. That doesn't answer the problem that we all have when we go to the pump tomorrow. You know, have to pay outrageous prices to fill our cars. But I'm also reminded of my friend Earl Blumenauer from Oregon, who's a transportation guru. He points out the problem in America is that we're all stuck in our SUVs in traffic on our way to the health center to ride a stationary bicycle. And America has just got to get off this addiction to gas-guzzling vehicles and get into fuel-efficient and alternative fuels, and I think California will lead the way.
Thank you for that question. Remember, if you have a question for Congressman Farr, press *3 on your phone at any point during the call. You'll still be able to hear what's going on, and somebody will be with you to take your call shortly. Our next question comes from Mary Adams from Santa Cruz. Mary has a question about impeachment. Mary, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? I've heard that Congressman Kucinich has reintroduced one article to impeach Bush, and that Nancy Pelosi is considering passing it on to the judiciary. Frankly, I'm disgusted with the Democrats for not having done something sooner. This was perhaps the Congress was handed back to the Democrats.
Well, Mary, if I can respond to that, yes, Congressman Dennis Kucinich brought his second articles of impeachment to the House floor yesterday, the day before yesterday. We voted for it at his request. It went to the Committee of Jurisdiction, the only committee that can handle impeachments was the Judiciary Committee. The Speaker has suggested hearings. This is the first time that the Speaker has suggested hearings. I think she's, in the past, heard the criticism, we ought to move on with it. we frankly only have about 20 days of legislative action left. And I just don't think that you're going to, in 20 days, have the articles of impeachment in shape where it can be brought to the House floor and voted on, because right after we adjourn, what we elect a new president. But nonetheless, there are things you ought to know about. The Judiciary Committee has issued subpoenas to the White House Chief of Staff, Josh Bolton, and former counsel Harriet Myers. Those were ignored. The Judiciary Committee continues to hold oversight hearings on the administration activities and hold them accountable. And those actions don't get suspended when this group leaves the White House. So if indeed criminal actions have occurred, they can be probed and examined and heard in the next Congress as well. So I don't think the votes are here for impeachment, certainly not in the Senate, where they would have to vote for impeachment. And a lot of people are in the House just don't want to have that argument before the election. I'm supporting Congressman Kucinich, and I think you'd be pleased with that. And so I think we're keeping it alive, but my sense of history and sense of this place is that we're going to run out of time before the elections are held to have a vote on an impeachment. And remember, it takes 60 votes in the Senate, and we don't have 60 Democratic members. There are only 51 members of who can vote who are Democrats. And so I don't think you're going to find Republican votes who would vote for impeachment.
Thank you, Congressman. Again, callers, if you have a question for the Congressman, press *3 anytime during the call, and somebody will be with you shortly. Our next question comes from Zeb Nevins from Santa Cruz. Zeb has a question on ecological sustainability. Zeb, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Hi, Congressman. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Zeb.
Yeah. I'm concerned about making our communities more ecologically sustainable. And as you know, here in Monterey Bay and everywhere in California, but especially along the coast, the demands for housing puts a lot of pressure on governments to approve high density developments within the city, which I think is a reasonable thing to do. But a lot of times this, it increases the pressure around surrounding areas,
mm-hmm.
like Watsonville and Corralitos, and to turn farmland into housing. And I wonder how you see this playing out in the long term, and what kind of balance should we be pushing farmland further into the areas where people don't want to live and developing places that people do want to live? Or do you see it as something that should be a mixed use type?
Yeah. Well, thank you for asking the question. It's one of my pet passions in politics is smart growth. And I really approach it not just from an environmental standpoint, but mostly from an economic standpoint. It just really doesn't make any sense to have urban sprawl. And that's sort of what California has been doing, because we haven't been very smart about planning. And unfortunately, Congress doesn't have much of a role in this, because all of the decisions on growth are made at the local level by cities and counties through their general plans and through implementing those general plans. And those plans can be amended every so often. And I think the history of California is more people have settled and grown in the state. It's just, let's move further out. There's been plenty of land, you know, go over the hills and start another community. And then everybody has to commute back in. And so we have huge commute problems and air problems and transportation problems, because we don't have density populations that can support mass transit. So it really makes sense from a standpoint, particularly where we live, where our strongest economies, which are job fulfilling, are the agriculture and tourism, and they're getting better and better in being able to be sustainable wages and things like that. But we're going to kill the goose that lays the golden egg. Nobody else can farm like we can or can show off scenery like we can. And therefore, we need to preserve that as an economic asset. And therein says, let's just be smarter about how we build communities. We don't have to build them so that people feel so squished. You can use great architectural talents. UC Santa Cruz has certainly been one of the leaders in being able to look at that on density and use of density, smart growth. I think you saw after the earthquake that Watsonville too, but Santa Cruz more so, really reinvested in downtown, and it's an exciting downtown now, and probably the most exciting downtown of all the communities in the Central Coast. They did it very smartly and actually increased density and increased affordability and increased small businesses. And I think that's a good lesson to learn. So I'm really worried that, we're having just in the southern part of my district in Soledad, a small community that it's Walmart, the super Walmart's trying to come in, and I just know it's going to wipe out all those small businesses in that town, the small drug stores, small grocery stores. They're not going to be able to compete, and they're going to suck the soul out of the center of the town, as we saw done in Hollister and somewhat in Watsonville. And I think that's stepping on our heritage and the people who've made our communities great. Every town has a soul, and I think our generations got to help protect that soul. That's what's unique about living in a community. It's different from the next community because of its history and because of its wonderful people. And if we just homogenize it and make them all look exactly the same because they're all big shopping centers, we won't have any identity anymore. And, someday all that's going to crash because people are going to buy everything off the internet. They're not going to, gas prices the way they are, they're not going to go to shopping centers. And they don't want to spend that time shopping when they can do it at home at night and order it by mail and have it delivered the next day. So I think that there's high risk in putting all this attention into the huge shopping centers. And I would hope that we can use smart growth to sustain the souls of our communities in the Central Coast. They're great communities, and I want them to keep them that way.
Thank you. Callers, if you are waiting to ask a question, please be ready to give one of our town hall assistants your name, your city, and your question. And if you have a question for Congressman Farr, please press *3 at any point during this call. Our next question comes from Kathy Corcoran from Aptos. Kathy has a question about reforming our education system. Kathy, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Thank you. Good evening.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Congressman, I've been a teacher for 28 years, and I think it's time for some real serious reform, and it would be nice to see California take a lead in that. We have to compete now in a global community, and to be honest with you, our high schools aren't doing the job they should be doing, and we're, as teachers, under so many different sanctions and regulations and state-mandated things that it's kind of difficult. Do you see in the near future any resolve or any indication that education is going to take, a front seat in funding and importance in this state again?
Kathy, I think that the next administration, and I think it's going to be the Obama administration, I hope so, will really put education right up there with the issues of getting out of Iraq and getting back in to America, being a globally competitive nation, also a globally friendly and outreaching nation, and we've got to do that by reforming our K-12 education system. The No Child Left Behind has been a failure. It's made people lose all of the qualities that community schools have, makes teachers teach to the test, penalizes schools. It's not the way you lift all ships, as we have to do to be competitive in a global market. And I think that we understand that. I mean, it's interesting when I get briefed on security issues back here, it's always reminded that the strongest security for a nation is a well-educated electorate. And That is what we have to do to reinvest in our national security, is reinvest in our education system and make it globally effective, I think is a word I'm using tonight. But I'm with you, and I want to congratulate you and thank you. I don't think there's a higher calling or service than a great teacher. Everybody admires them, and for all the years you've been teaching, if you can hang on a few more years, we're going to get it straightened out, and we'll get rid of No Child Left Behind, and we'll replace it with something that'll be much more to your liking, and I think much more effective in getting kids, all kids, to enjoy learning.
Thank you for that question. Callers, if you have a question for the Congressman, press *3 anytime during the call, and someone will be with you shortly. Our next call comes from Bob LaMonica from Santa Cruz. Bob has a question about Iraq. Bob, are you there?
Right here. Hello.
You are live with Congressman Farr.
Well, first of all, Congressman Farr, thank you for putting on this forum. It's very current and very proactive.
Thank you.
Are we not obligated to leave Iraq better developed economically and politically than we entered it?
Well, ideally, yes, but I'm not sure we entered it under the right premises. And certainly we are, I think we are responsible for helping build kind of a nation state if the Iraqis are interested. They say they are. I think there's a time when, as any parent has to do, you help as much as you can, and then the child has to stand on their own 2 feet. And I think that that's essentially what we're trying to do, is see if Iraqis are serious about wanting to govern a country. And we're certainly helping them with all the infrastructure capabilities. But I don't think it can go on forever. And there is a point when we have to leave.
Thank you for that question. Our next question comes from Ray from Santa Cruz. His question is about Medicare and Medi-Cal, specifically about dental coverage. Ray, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Hello.
Hi, Ray.
Congressman Farr. Yes. First of all, I wanted to ask, what kind of, you know, I know there were cuts at the federal level on Medicaid, right? So how extensive were those cuts, and how does that relate to, I know this governor is trying to eliminate Dentical, which, you know, I think is really awful. There's about, I don't know, there's several thousand people that are served by Medi-Cal, Dentical, and I'm one of them. And I've been really worried about this because, you know, I'm on low income. I'm on a disability income, okay? And I'm very concerned about losing my Dentical. And I understand that the government is on a chopping block, that Dentical is on a chopping block for the state budget. I don't see any benefit to cutting all these programs. You know, he's eliminated so many jobs. I'm outraged. You know. I know a lot of people that have been moved from their jobs. Fortunately, they didn't lose their jobs, but they were working for the county,
mm-hmm.
and you know, for disability, you know, for people that are on disability, and they because of this governor, who got us into this problem to begin with, they have to suffer for it.
Well, Ray, can I try to explain?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm very passionate about the program that the state of California created. It's not a federal program. It's a California program, and the governor, in his decision on trying to balance the state budget, has been whacking and cutting a lot of California programs. This is a foolish cut because it deals with health care, and everybody knows that the mouth is a primary health. If it's not, mouth isn't healthy, it leads to all kinds of other problems. You have one of the best clinics I've ever visited in Santa Cruz under this program. It's all subject to state money. And the federal program, which you're hearing about too, because the president has been trying to cut it. But as I said earlier in this discussion, we overrode his attempted cut at the program. For Medicare, it doesn't affect the dental program that you are talking about. I would just urge all of the recipients, and I know I've been doing it myself, is to contact John Laird and let him know that this program is going to lead to all kinds of other problems, and where are people going to go to get that emergency dental treatment. So it's I'm sorry to see this is all being whacked at because we don't have a national comprehensive health care plan, which we can do if we have the will in Washington to do it. As Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker, says, it's only a decision. We have to make the decision that that's what we want to do, and we will find the ways and means to carry it out. But that decision has not been made in the White House, and without presidential leadership, it will be impossible for Congress to craft a package that the president will sign. So we're putting our hopes on the next administration, and hopefully we will finally have a comprehensive national health care program, which ought to incorporate dental care as well. Thank you, Ray.
Callers, remember, if you have a question for Congressman Farr, please press *3 at any point during the call. If you are waiting, please be patient. We will be with you shortly. Our next question comes from Denise from Santa Cruz. Denise has a question about the Santa Cruz River. Denise, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Hello?
Denise, are you there?
Hello?
Denise?
I'm sorry. Thank you for taking my question. My concern has to do with how long it has been since our city has been zoned by the U.S. Geological Survey as a floodplain. We pay flood insurance, I think, from the time before the levee was even installed. And I think it's kind of time to rezone since the river levee has been installed. And I was wondering if you have a handle on when that rezoning is planning on taking place.
Well, I'm not sure I understand the question. It is a federally assisted levee. It is a Corps of Engineers levee, as is the Watsonville levee. We don't have any of those levees in the Monterey County. Santa Cruz has the only two in the district, and they're both in Santa Cruz County. And we did repair it. What we did was raise the bridge levels on the levee. We created that new walkway, parkway. That was federal money that did that. The city of Santa Cruz is very aggressively redesigned and tried to make it not only an effective engineering floodplain, but aesthetically pleasing floodplain as well, a river channel, excuse me. And it was upgraded to the higher standard, and that ought to either hold your older floodplain insurance from increasing or keep it from increasing very much, because essentially it's a much safer floodplain now than prior to that. Watsonville doesn't have that privilege yet because we still haven't gotten around to getting a consensus on the design and the amount of local match money that's going to go into that. So I think if it's really just a zoning issue that you're talking about, being a floodplain zone, that's really between local government that works with the federal criteria. And I would approach your Board of Supervisors, City Council, about that. Thank you for the question.
Thank you very much. Remember, if you have a question for Congressman Farr, please press *3 on your phone at any point. Our next question comes from Gail from Santa Cruz. Gail has a question about solar tax credits. Gail, you are live with Congressman Sam Farr.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I'm hoping that Congressman Farr, you and the other congressmen can get together and somehow work with the Republicans to get these renewable energy tax credits passed, because I work in the solar industry. I know that I will lose my job if the tax credits don't pass. And I know that if we had a good renewable energy policy here in the U.S., we could help a lot of the problems that were, you know, many of your callers have talked about. You know, with the economy in the state that it is, the renewable energy economy is actually booming and bringing more jobs. And with more jobs, we'd have people paying more taxes, which would help the economy here in California. and then we wouldn't have so many cuts going on. I know it's a, you know, a deeper issue than just as that simply, but is there any way you and the other congressmen can work with Republicans to get these tax credits passed?
Well, we thought we could. We still haven't been able to get the White House to be excited about it because they haven't helped us at all. But essentially, as I mentioned earlier, the election's around the corner, and the new mantra from the Republicans has been drill, 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 and the Democrats has been alternative energy, alternative energy, alternative energy. Continue the existing tax cuts so that we can have that reinvestment into sustainable energy practices. And more importantly, as you stated out, just a booming economy, particularly for California, where the brain trusts lie, where the manufacturing capabilities lie, and where we can be exporting all over the country, in addition, all over the world, as all these nations start facing this global warming problem. So I think it's really shooting ourselves in the foot not to extend these tax credits. We've been trying to get the votes to get it passed, and the House, I think, has them. Nancy Pelosi's been a great leader in that. It's just that we can't get it to the White House. I could tell you that is a fight we're going to take down to the last hour of the session this year, and hopefully we can get it done, because I know how critical it is to your industry, and I appreciate you being in it and raising the question.
Thank you for that question. Callers, remember, if you have a question for Congressman Farr, please press *3 at any point during the call. Our next question comes from Terry Kinder from Aptos. Terry has a question about replanting trees after the fires. Terry, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi, Terry.
Okay. How are you doing?
Very well,
thank
you.
I'd like to ask a question. I'd like to, first of all, thank all the firefighters for doing such a good job. I'm a little concerned about they're cutting a lot of fire roads. Of course, they had to do some fire roads for maintaining and for future fires. And I noticed a lot of redwoods coming out of the Redwood National Forest. I was wondering, does the federal government help with the replanting, you know, they have a program for financing and replanting of these redwoods that are coming out, and also does the, since a redwood can be sold for $1,200 a redwood, you know, for one tree, I was wondering, does California benefit from that, or what happens with that exactly? I mean, is...
Well, the redwood, you have publicly owned lands and privately owned lands and forests, and to harvest timber, you have to have a timber harvest plan for redwoods. It's a very selective cutting. There's no clear cutting of them, and the old growth redwoods are protected. Either they're in park status or they're in the timber harvest planning. I don't know, do you have a company that's sort of the Sierra Club model for perfect timber practices, sustainable timber practices, which is the Big Creek Lumber Company in Santa Cruz? And it's been always had the model. If the rest of the nation would follow the McCurry family's practices, I think we would have a much more of an appreciation for forest practices that are really sound and environmentally supportive. But I don't know what's coming out of the Northern California. There have been about 2,000 fires in California. I think 81 of them are still burning, including one small one that's in Castle, on the Castle Fire on the summit right now. It's only 18,000 acres, and I think the Cal Fire was expecting to contain that today. But we had the Summit Fire, the Tabling Fire, the Martin Fire, and then the Monterey County fires. And your question is what happens after the fires, and they have restoration teams that are required by law to go in and restore them, but mostly not to do all tree planting. They allow nature to do that. I think in certain areas there is restoration where there have been blade cuts to try to make those scars heal. But it's mainly about trying to prevent erosion and runoff in the wintertime so that we don't have a second disaster followed by the fire. Those teams are active now, and I don't have the contact numbers here in Washington, but I'll have them in my office in Santa Cruz in Monterey. And if you want to get into really seeing what kind of plan is being developed for each of the fires that burned in Santa Cruz County or any other part of the state, those plans will be are public information. And I know on the Big Sur fire now, they're having a town hall meeting tomorrow in Big Sur to go over the restoration plan. And that is open to the public for comment. And I'm sure that they're probably having those kinds of hearings in Santa Cruz County as well. So I appreciate your interest in this. And I look into them and see if you think they're doing the right job.
Thank you for that question. Our next question comes from Marty Brick from Santa Cruz. Marty has a question about China and the deficit. Marty, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You are live with Congressman Farr.
Hi, Congressman Sam. This is a real wonderful experience for me to be on the first time I've ever known about the fact that you had these wonderful forums that we can all call in about.
Well, Marty, I just started them a few months ago. I've been as excited as you have because I think it's very convenient.
It's wonderful to be part of this. And my question is, we've been recently bombarded with information through the media about the Olympics in China, and I have two concerns about our relationships with China. Number one is the fact that we have borrowed a tremendous amount on the federal level from the Chinese coffers, and I would like to find out if you know where I can get information on some of the facts and figures about that. And my second question is there anything in the future that people are going to be working on to try to keep foreign governments from buying all of our land up? Pretty soon they'll have all of our land and they'll just come over and we won't have American ownership of our land. Can you answer those two questions for me, please?
Certainly. If the first one on what's happening to American debt and who's buying that, if you will kind of put that in a letter to me, there's going to be a one-page letter just sort of asking your question, I'll get the Congressional Research Service, which is the Library of Congress, and they're incredible, smart team of folks over there to personally get the research data and send that to you. Secondly, on the buying of land, I'm not sure exactly what you mean. There is we don't prohibit foreign nationals or foreign companies from buying land. It certainly. But I don't know that there's a big rush on buying. There's a lot of rush in investing in America, because even though our dollar is weak and our economy is a little bit shaky right now, but a lot of people believe that we're still the best investment in the globe. And although that may be quickly changing as people watch the euro dollar and Europe grow, but I'm just not aware that there's a sort of a land grab going on in the United States. I haven't heard that, but if there are probably some restrictions on that, and I'd be glad to find those out for you, too. And we'll both learn from that. Thank you for that good question. Well, my office is in Santa Cruz, and that's in the phone book, or we can give it to you when we leave the call tonight.
Just as a reminder, callers, if we can't get to your question during this broadcast, you will also have the chance to leave a voice message for the congressman at the end of the call. Our next question comes from Mary Ringgross from Aptos. She has a question about Iraq. Mary, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Thank you, Congressman. I, too, want to thank you for this great opportunity to participate in discussion with you and other local citizens. I wanted to ask you, considering how entrenched we are in Iraq financially and militarily, will, assuming the president is a Democrat, Barack Obama, will we be able to pull out of Iraq in a year or 16 months? Is that realistic? I know it's the will of the people, but can we actually do that?
Well, Prime Minister Maliki has indicated he doesn't want us in Iraq very much longer. So you have the Iraqi people that have essentially stated through their political process that they'd like to see us have a deadline. Barack Obama is running on the fact that he would like to get us out as quickly as is feasible. There's all kinds of some caveats in that. We cannot, I mean, you get down to the economics of it, we can't afford it anymore. We just, we're spending, I mean, if you look at it just in proportionality, Iraq is a nation of about 26 million people. California is a state, sometimes thinking it's a nation state, of about 36 million people. We're sending more money to Iraq than California is spending for its entire state of this of the most advanced economic society in the globe. And you cannot be shipping all that money abroad and being able to sustain our own economies. And you can see what kind of problems we're having. We're not reinvesting in America, which we need to do right now to build up the job. So economically, we've got to get out of Iraq. The court of world opinion wants us out of Iraq, and Iraqis want us out of Iraq. So I think we're going to get out as soon as possible.
Okay, callers, we are coming to the end of our broadcast. Again, if you haven't gotten a chance to leave your or ask the congressman your question during the call, you will have the chance to leave a voicemail at the end of the call. Our next question comes from Debbie from Santa Cruz. Her question is about S-CHIP. Debbie, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Congressman Farr, I know we're so fortunate in Santa Cruz County to have a lot of our children covered by health care, but on the national level, I don't know what's happening with the S-CHIP for children's health.
President Bush has vetoed two S-CHIP bills. S-CHIP is the program that provides health insurance to children. Mm-hmm. And it has been the number one priority of Nancy Pelosi to get all the children in America covered. So we have senior citizens covered by Medicare, but we have no like kind of program for children. And we know that ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. It's something we ought to be doing. And we passed an S-CHIP bill that keeps the existing program in place and good financially until the end of 2009. I remember Nancy Pelosi in our caucus the other day indicating that before Congress adjourns and goes home for elections in September, October, that she's going to try to get another S-CHIP bill on the president's desk. So and that bill would revise and expand the present S-CHIP program. Fortunately, you're in a county and in a state that is very concerned about this issue, and Santa Cruz County, but they need the financial wherewithal to carry it out, has insured every child from birth till age 18, till they become an adult. And that's really laudable. There's only a few counties in California have done that, and you're living in one of the most progressive in healthcare. But it's absolutely the smart investment. The due to otherwise is to try to save money is a penny-wise, pound-foolish, and we can't afford to be pound-foolish anymore. So thank you for your question. We're working to shore up the financial end here in Washington.
Okay, I think we have time for one more question. Our last question will come from Jan from Santa Cruz. Jan has a question about service. Jan, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Hi, Congressman Farr. I'm wondering, when Clinton first came into office, he had a really exciting idea about national service, non-military national service, in exchange for some tuition relief for working and middle-class students for higher education. And I'm wondering, now that I'm struggling to get two boys in college, if that died with Clinton, or if anybody is still talking about the possibility of those kind of programs.
Well, I am, for one, because I'm a big fan of national service. As you know, I got out of college and went into the Peace Corps, and I just changed my whole life around, and I'm now in a career public service before it. And I just find that there's so much to be done here and abroad, and so much exciting and so much learning to go on. It's the best investment we can make. And, you know, I'm a big Peace Corps champion, and it's ironic that the Congress hasn't, until recently, even given the Peace Corps as much money as President Bush has asked for. So sometimes it's the funding problem. But the bigger problem is that bills have been around for years calling for national service, but then it gets into a big bureaucracy of how much it's going to cost and who's going to administer it when we already have a lot of state, local, non-governmental. We have a lot of sort of charitable work going on in America, and do we grandfather all those in? How do we administer? So Jim McDermott, who's a wonderful congressman from Seattle, and has done a lot of public service. He's a doctor by training. He and I are authoring a bill to create a commission to figure out the administrative, the way to administer it and what it would cost. And I think until we have that way, until we can suggest answers to these questions that are always raised and always killed all the past bills, we won't be able to move it through the legislative process. So that commission hopefully gets set up this year, and a year from now, we'll have recommendations back to really implement a national service corps. And I think that the next president of the United States will be very excited about it. It's just the ways and the means to do it, and the desire's out there. We've just got to figure out the administration of it, and I think we are capable of doing that. And I really, really thank you for your question. If anybody's interested, there's just so many ways one can serve as teachers, doctors, lawyers, professionals, non-professionals. And these fires are a great example. An awful lot of the people that come in and fight these fires are from the California Conservation Corps, a wonderful program that allows youth to if they're not knowing exactly what they want to do, to get into these programs that have helped communities up and down through our floods. They went through the rivers and cleared them out. They've been in our forest fires. And I was on the fires, and I was really proud of them and thanked them all for the service they're giving. So it's all over the place, and hopefully we can make it credible and getting credit for it in all factions of life. And I appreciate your asking the question.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. If we did not get a chance to get to your question during the call, please stay on the line and leave a voice message for the congressman. Congressman, we have just a second or so left. Would you like to offer any parting thoughts?
Well, I have to tell you something amusing. I'm sitting here at my window in my Washington office, and during the question on the Iraq War, someone in this town or in Virginia across the river is having a big fireworks display because it sounded like almost a war going on out there, and I thought it was ironic that it came up at the same time we were talking, and I'm looking out there and realizing now what it is. It's a brand new baseball stadium, and there's a baseball game tonight. And the Nationals must have done something good, or else those fireworks wouldn't have gotten off. This is a great technology, and if you like it, let our office know. If you don't like it, if you have suggestions on how we can improve it, I'd love to hear that. I try to claim that we're a user-friendly congressional office, and I hope this has been a technique to help us be a little more user-friendly. Thank you for your interest. Thank you for listening, for asking questions, and I look forward to doing it again. And if you have any follow-up, please contact my office or stay on the line, and we will record your questions, and I will answer them. Thank you very much. Good night.